Our scripture reading this morning is from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 8. Starting at verse 27. Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Who do people say that I am?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" And Peter answered, "You are the Christ." A very short extract from Mark's Gospel there. Right, well, we're starting a course this week, for the next 6 weeks, with a number of sermons and life group talks on the theme of talking Jesus. And I felt there was some irony that Tim requested me to open this set of weeks on this theme, given that I'm probably the most introverted and quiet member of this church. So yeah, I take on his challenge, and he gave me only 3 verses to preach on, so this may be brief. But anyway, I'm going to start at the end. I'm going to give you my final words. My final words are going to be, let's go again and talk Jesus. So for the next few minutes, you can consider your response while I speak to lead us into this course. And the course is gently trying to help us talk about our faith and the person of Jesus in a natural and relaxed way. We're doing this over 6 sessions. We're going to look at it in life groups over the next few weeks. And if you don't currently attend a life group and would like to, there are meetings on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And at the moment, you can Zoom in from a device of your choice from the comfort of your own home, wherever you happen to be. And if you need any detail on that, please just see me afterwards. So we're going to start with this passage from Mark and weave our way through the theme of who do you say that I am? Now, this is an important episode in the Gospels. It's recorded in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and it records a transition in the description from Jesus the teacher and leader of disciples to Jesus the recognized Messiah. But for some context as to how we get here and how Peter gets here before he actually makes this declaration, we can just do a speed read of the first 8 chapters of Mark. And these reveal, in the narrative, that at the beginning, John the Baptist, he starts a preaching tour, and he announces the Messiah's coming. And then John the Baptist baptizes Jesus. Jesus goes away to spend 40 days alone in the wilderness. John, unfortunately, gets imprisoned and is beheaded. Jesus then starts a preaching tour himself, and on that preaching tour, he calls disciples, he travels around, he teaches and heals many people, and then out of that group of disciples that he's called, he selects 12 from the larger group to be his inner core group. And he sends these 12 out in pairs to preach, he gives them spiritual authority, they perform healing. Jesus performs miracles of feeding 4,000 and 5,000 people at once. And after all of this, we get to this conversation. Who do people say that I am? So Jesus, at this point, he's asking about his reputation at this stage of his ministry. His brand recognition, if you like, in his identity in the public eye, in today's terminology. He's asking what people are thinking and saying about him before they've met him. So it's feedback from the disciples' preaching tour, if you like. And an interesting side note about this is that the disciples' answer to the first question is consistent with the feedback that's given to Herod 2 chapters earlier in Mark chapter 6, verses 12 to 14. This Herod is Herod Antipas, the son of the Herod of the Nativity story. And this Herod has met John. He's heard about Jesus and about the disciples preaching and healing. And in verse 14 in chapter 6, it's noted Jesus' name had become well known in the region. And they told Herod, some were saying he's John the Baptist raised from the dead. And that's why miraculous power is at work in him. Others say he's Elijah. Still others claiming he's a prophet, like one of the prophets of long ago. But when Herod heard this, he said, John, the man I beheaded, he's been raised from the dead. And that's Herod's rather curious rationalization. I mean, he had John killed. And he now thinks the best explanation of Jesus is that he's come back to life. So clearly, the idea that someone might be raised from the dead is not so outlandish. It couldn't be held by both a part of the general population and a senior official there. And the second suggestion from the general crowd was that Jesus was a prophet. But Old Testament prophets, although they reinforced earlier teaching and made calls for obedience and repentance, they all point towards the Messiah. And that wasn't Jesus' message. The third suggestion here that Jesus was Elijah returned, which is something that's hinted at in Old Testament teaching by Malachi. And devout Jews who knew their scriptures would anticipate this event. But this is clearly not the case. Because as we move forward in Mark's gospel, the very next chapter, where there's the transfiguration on the mountain, Elijah makes an appearance talking to Jesus. So Jesus cannot be Elijah returned. So the gospel writer illustrates that even when Jesus was on this earth preaching and healing, and he was there for people to meet, still there was a range of opinion amongst the people about Jesus' identity. And this view was shared by Herod's advisors and by Jesus' disciples when they were asked. So to bring it back to today, when we are talking Jesus to people, we should similarly expect that the people we talk to will have a range of views about the person and work of Jesus based on what they've heard and seen in the past and how they've interpreted it. So a positive thing we can take about this confusion is that they have an opinion, which means they must have encountered Jesus' teaching at some point before and formed a view, and therefore there's something for us to have a conversation around. But Peter, in particular here, is noted as having seen Jesus as the Christ, the Messiah. And this is the first recorded acknowledgement in the Gospel of Jesus as an elder, as an adult, as a preacher, as the Messiah. So what does this mean to us? Well, we can look at a high level at the whole story and see that Peter has come on a journey of discovery himself, a journey towards faith. The timeline of this is not easy to deduce, but we're well into Jesus' 3 years of ministry. And in the months that Peter has been with him, he's gone from being a Galilean fisherman, first hearing about Jesus, going to following him, listening to his teaching, then to being selected to be one of his chosen 12 apostles, and now being recorded as acknowledging him as the Son of God. Quite a long journey just for Peter. So when we talk about Jesus to our friends, our family, our neighbours, they may be somewhere on that journey. They could be right at the beginning, just not really having heard about him and being just a person doing their regular job. They may be somewhere along that journey of discovery. And we could be the person that God has sent to help them along a particular part or all of that journey and lead them towards a life of faith. But if we cheat a little bit and expand on the reading that was given us and say, what happens to Peter immediately? After he said, you are the Christ, or in some translation, you are the Messiah, and had this moment of revelation where if we were making a film of this, we might have some fanfares in the background of a music score to this plot line. Is this the peak of Peter's story? Has he just reached this great understanding? Or no? What's the first thing he does after this? Immediately, if we read forward, Jesus then starts to teach about his onward journey towards the cross and his death. And Peter takes him aside and says to him, no, that's not how it's going to happen. Because he's afraid of losing him, maybe. And he starts to argue with Jesus about the next step of the plan. I mean, who does Peter think he is, really? And he deserves the rebuke that Jesus gives him. But my point is this. He makes a mistake immediately. After having made this revelation, the first thing he does, he makes a mistake and needs some correction, which is a word perhaps for anyone here this morning or more pertinently listening on playback who is young in the faith. Even the best, even the most devout people make mistakes. Jesus promised Peter that he would build his church and he would have authority in Matthew 16, verse 18. But the next thing he does is argue with Jesus because he doesn't yet understand everything. And part of our faith journey is learning more about Jesus along the way. So at this point in the gospel, with Peter's confession, Jesus has established that the Spirit is working in his disciples' lives, and they're ready to move on to the next set of teaching. So now he confides in them his forecast, his prophecy as to what's going to happen, the road to the cross. And once we have declared that Jesus is Lord and asked Jesus into our lives to forgive us and transform us, our faith journey continues as we worship, as we read his word and pray and grow in understanding. It's just a stepping stone on the way. Which brings me perhaps to my second point. That sometimes when talking Jesus with our friends and our acquaintances, family, colleagues, we may not know the answer to every question they have. We may not know how to respond to a particular point they raise as challenge or an observation or maybe an accusation. But to acknowledge that, and maybe to go away and to consider what they've said and maybe consult with others in your life group or ask our minister Tim or any other trusted friends who have a deeper faith before going back to the person we were talking to originally with an answer, it's just a way of progressing the conversation of talking Jesus. A reason to have another coffee and talk again, and with a degree of humility and honesty that would resonate with an inquirer. So if you're talking Jesus and getting that kind of engagement, that kind of response, that kind of challenge, that's a good thing because the conversation is moving along the way. But that was the first. Jesus asked two questions of the disciples, going back to the passage in Mark. One was, who do other people say that I am? And then the real question he wanted to ask of the disciples, who do you say that I am? What is your point of, if you like, of commitment at this point in time? What have you understood? And Jesus has that challenge for us today, doesn't he? We can ask the question, who is Jesus to you or to me? And do we think that he's a famous teacher that lays down a strong set of ethical and moral codes that we can follow to make us a better person? Do we think that he's a prophet described from 2,000 years ago, but his message is pointing to later times and to what we should do now? Or is he some kind of spiritual advisor giving us a pathway to wellness and good mental health at this time? Or is he the Son of God, the Redeemer of the world, the only way back to the Father, the resurrected, living God? Peter, when asked this question, says to Jesus, to his face, you are the Christ, you are the Messiah. And we need to be sure in our own belief and faith so that when we are talking Jesus with others, we can give an honest and straightforward answer. Now, we're all called to be witnesses for Jesus, to have a testimony, for words to share our faith with others. And if we look forward into the letter of Peter, it reminds the reader in chapter 3, verse 15. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. And that verse is talking Jesus in a nutshell. Always be prepared, willing to give the time to do this when the opportunity arises, and with gentleness and respect. Yes, there is an urgency to do this, an imperative, a need to get up and go, but not in reeling out rehearsed speeches, not preaching one-on-one, just talking to everyone who asks about your hope, your faith, gently and respectfully. But finally, I can hear some of you think, well, Jeff, these are nice words, but I've been sharing Jesus for 20, 30, 40 years. What can you teach me? What has this got to do with me at this time? And if that's all your response today, that's fine, because I can't teach anyone. But my challenge to you is this. With this new year, our world is changing again. I thank you for wearing your masks today and do as much as we can to keep this time healthy and safe for everybody. You know, in the announcements this week signal that restrictions and laws are going to change and we're going to move forward into January and February and maybe relax some things and just have to take things as we go. And as we move into this COVID endemic world and coffee shops fill up again, and we can take up our more opportunities to meet with friends, to meet with family, to meet with colleagues, no longer working solely at home, to meet with our neighbours, to meet with people who you meet on holiday and talk Jesus. Speaking of opportunities, I was actually listening to a webinar this week, and the speakers were from churches who had taken part in Climate Change Sunday last summer. If you remember, Tim preached on this subject as we met outside, just over there in the community centre, in the sunshine, sitting on folded chairs on the grassy bank. But on these webinars, the speakers talked about the events and initiatives in their churches, and they were mostly small changes, but positive signs of activity. They told anecdotes about how these activities towards reducing their carbon footprint or doing something with recycling, they sparked conversations with wider members of their wider community, because those members of the community had connections with the green issues and the actions taken to support them, but not necessarily the church. One person spoke of a summer fete that they'd normally run, but they'd rethemed it along green issues. And another spoke of meeting in a different place in their church meeting in a different hall in the winter because that had got a more efficient heating and it just reduced the carbon footprint that they had from their old chapel, which had inefficient heating. And they shared with their community what they were doing and why. And it was an opportunity to begin to engage with them, not only on those issues, but about in talking Jesus. So they found this as a way to introduce other people from a point of shared understanding about one thing towards the gospel. It could be an opportunity. I mean, here, just to take another example, I said in the notices, in a couple of weeks' time, there's a network lunch club, the Cameo Lunch Club, that's starting on a Wednesday lunchtime. If you're around on Wednesday, want to come along to Well Street Church for an hour or so, have a lunch and bring somebody along, sit down with them. Then you've got a chance with them, maybe for an hour, to listen to them and to share Jesus. But as we speak here of moving forward into 2022, I'm going to say at this point to anyone here today or listening to this on playback that if you've lost a loved one to COVID, I'm deeply sorry about that. And perhaps talk of moving on into 2022 isn't really what you want to hear. I know for myself, not a day's gone by during the last 2 years, I've not dreaded receiving a phone call to say one of the more vulnerable members of my extended family might have gone down with the virus. But what I can offer you at this moment is to say, to cast your cares and your feelings, maybe your anger, maybe your confusion at this point in time, cast them at the foot of the cross in prayer. Allow the grace of God to come into your situation. Maybe if this is for you, come along to the Renew Cafe on Saturday morning, the place where it's okay to be not okay down at Well Street. Talk with one of the volunteers. We'll pray with you and support you. And if you know someone who's grieving, come alongside them. Talk with them. Because maybe at a time of loss or when they're in a dark place, they too might want to reach out and begin to talk about Jesus. And it's something we can do gently and respectfully. Talk about Jesus and his love and mercy at all times. So to conclude, we can collectively here be thankful today that we have a God who cares for each one of us and everyone we meet. And this is the story we have to tell when we're going out and talking Jesus. That we have the freedom in our plural society to spread the gospel without fear of any reprisal from an authority. We can be thankful that we have a faith in the living God to share with others. And we are thankful that Jesus is Lord. And finally, for anyone, if they're thinking that this course might just be too basic and not for them, well, instead of going to a life group on an evening, go and spend that same hour that you would have been spent being there on the phone or going to see somebody and just talk Jesus and start doing it. But most importantly, as we all move forward, as restrictions relax and we can move into 2022, let's go again and talk Jesus.